Welcome to Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons.
Q is about conversation.
If we're really concerned about ending poverty, we've got to be more concerned about creating justice.
Our cultural products as Christians need to both defy and resonate with the culture.
And God's doing amazing things. His church is expanding. His church is growing.
It's not what's the purpose of my life. It's what is the purpose that's been assigned.
Stay curious. Think well. Advance good. This is Q.
Thanks again for taking some time out to listen to Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons. I'm Paul Perreault from Faith Radio, and if you were with us last week, you heard segments of a special gathering of Christian leaders that happened shortly after the Ferguson riots a couple of years ago. In light of more recent racial incidents, we thought hearing these thought leaders may help you think about how to engage on this important issue to bring about racial harmony. Last week we heard about the problem, its roots, about implicit bias, and how any route to healing or unity comes from the biblical concept of the Imago Dei, how we as humans are all created in the image of God. It's from here that we start this week's show.
So understanding the importance of the image of God in this conversation, I wanted to talk to somebody who I know has studied this quite a bit and could give us some great insight into it. That person's Bethany Wang. Bethany has served as the International Justice Mission's Director of Biblical Justice, and she's someone who's very committed in her whole life to justice and reconciliation. She's somebody who I've seen write about this concept and who understands it very well. And so I ask her to explain to us more about the responsibility we have as Christians to see others as being made in the image of God.
The image of God is this phrase that comes from the very beginning of the Bible, when God first makes us, when God first makes man and woman. He says that he is creating us in his image. The reason that matters so much to us in our lives today, when we look at others in our world, there are so many ways that we can have discord, that we can be divided, whether it's the differences in race, whether it's differences in economics, or just people being fundamentally different from each other. And I think what we always lean towards is putting together sound bites that we can use to argue against each other, or building strawman arguments so we can knock others down, or finding ways, even if we're trying to have compassion or love, we try to find ways to do that in a way that won't actually cost us anything in the end. To think of other people as having the image of God, as being made in the image of God, it actually changes everything about how we see one another. And the way I've been thinking about it lately is just this idea of honoring other people, every single other person that we could come across, and to hold the image of God in them as holy. There's this holiness of who God is in every single created human being, no matter what.
As you can imagine, with a conversation like this, there's the opportunity and potential to go in 100 different directions with how we talk about it. And so we try to do our best to bring up the three big ideas, the ones that we thought were really practical, ones we could each do, something you could take action on in your life today, this week. And so as we continue that, the third and final point that we want to raise specifically is the idea of the poverty of friendship. Now, this is a concept that I'd never heard before. And if you're like me, when you hear poverty, you immediately think of economics. Well, Chris Hewerts, the founder of the Gravity Center, who's with us today, and Chris is a great guy. The stories that he brings as a person who served alongside Mother Teresa in Calcutta, and tells of conversations he had with her, and has an understanding of justice that goes far beyond just race, but understands the differences we all create in our society when it relates to differences such as class and economics, sexual identity, you name it, anything that could separate us. Chris sees his role as being one that helps us reconcile, that helps us come together to find one another, to love one another. And so to have Chris with us in this conversation today was really helpful. It was valuable. It was like having an elder there who could help us think well about this topic. And the one idea that Chris has talked so much about, he's written about, that he brings up in this conversation is this concept of our friendships and the poverty that we have of friendships and how that contributes to actually some of the problems that we're facing today.
One of the lamentable thing that many of us sort of experience in our own lives is sometimes the lack of diversity in our own sort of communal spaces, social spaces, or even sort of peer groups or sets of friendships. And this is really, I think, illustrated in what is often referred to as the racialization or the racialized realities that we live in. And so when we talk about racialization, what we're talking about is the sad sort of homogenized spaces that a lot of us who are not racist find ourselves trying to navigate through. We know that statistically, university-educated religious people are the least racist people. And this, of course, makes sense given our values, our convictions, the belief systems that we live into. But often, university-educated religious people live and work and actually worship in some of the most segregated spaces. And so if we're not racist, we at least find ourselves in these racialized spots. And what this racialization, I think, fundamentally points to is the poverty, the deep, deep poverty of our friendships. And so what I often ask people to do is pull up their cell phone and look at the last 10 phone calls or texts that they've sent or received. And if you're a 20-something Protestant young woman, if you're a 40-something white heterosexual male, most of the calls or texts that you send or receive go to folks that look like you, live like you, worship like you, think like you. And so when we look at this list, this call list, these names on the hit list of our texts, this is really a mirror back to us. And what this points to, like I said, is this poverty of friendship, this lack of sort of textured diversity that I think a lot of us long for or realize is important for us to live into these notions of the real we. And I think what we miss when we're sort of stuck in these spaces is living into the possibility of what the gifts of friendships with the so-called unlikely others may be for us. And so not only do we have to sort of lament this and confess this, but I also think we have to dismantle this. And I think really the call is to dismantle the false centers that we project, right? So I'm a white, heterosexual, 40-something American male who is often guilty of referring to my gay friend Danielle, my black friend Sharif, my Mexican friend Cecia. And what I always do is I use that one word that separates me from them and what's most different or what I perceive to be most different about who they are. But I never talk about my white, straight, Protestant friend Gabe. And what those terms, those qualifiers are, fortifies these false centers that keep us sort of stuck in this poverty. So one of the things that Mother Teresa used to tell us pretty frequently was that we need the poor more than the poor need us. And I think for a lot of us who wanted to build a better world, who gave ourselves to these vocations of hope, kept sort of wrestling with, was what does that mean? That we need the poor more than the poor need us. And I think in the confession of the poverty of our friendships, we live into that, that we need the so-called unlikely other who seems to be or may be the most different than who we experience ourselves as or identify ourselves to be, to sort of live into the fullness of who we are becoming together as this new we is birthed and ushered in and becomes really, I think, a tangible sign that the kingdom of God has come among us.
Don't you just love Chris? I mean, the practicality of knowing I can look at my phone right now to try to determine the poverty of my friendship. And I must admit, it's embarrassing. It's the friendships and my own personal poverty in this area is deep. And so I'm thankful for new friends. I'm thankful for people who've been willing to invest in relationship with me so that I can grow, so that my worldview can grow and can expand and I can understand the other more. But I think for all of us, you know, we have to consider that. We have to do an audit, really, of who are our closest relationships and why is it this way? And is this the way that it ought to be? I wanted to come back to an earlier point. I brought up the subject of writing because I know for many people listening, that's what they think of possibly when they think of Ferguson. They think of the literal police case, and then they think of this reaction, and they wonder what's going on there. And I know personally I've never understood this whole concept of writing. You know, it seemed to me like it's not quite the best way to gain sympathy or pull the heartstrings of those you want to engage in your cause, but I don't know anything about writing. But when David Bailey mentioned it and just reminded everybody in the room, giving us some perspective on possibly why rioting happens, I think it was an aha moment for all of us.
My heart is that, you know, I think people riot because they're trying to give voice to something that's voiceless. And I think rioting is a point where that's it's hopelessness in rioting. And And then you think, why are people hopeless, and where should people go to hope for hope? And they really should go to the church.
You've heard a lot from this conversation. We've heard from many different voices. We've heard about three important concepts. You know, one, taking account of our own implicit racial bias, and where does that show up? We heard about the image of God and the importance of grounding the way we see other people and understanding they're made in the image of God as well. And so that calls us to a higher responsibility as Christians. And then finally, we just heard from Chris Hewitts talking about diverse relationships and our poverty of friendship and the need to begin working on that and to be intentional about that. But finally, I want to conclude this by you getting to hear from Patricia. Remember Patricia Jenkins Armstrong, the freedom writer we heard from at the beginning of this? Well, she sat through this entire day of conversation. She weighed in. She gave us many good concepts, but she also just listened. She listened to the conversations we were having with one another, and it caught her off guard. I think it surprised her that this conversation was happening today in this place. She reflected on the day and gave us thoughts that I think surprised all of us.
Because I had begun to become, not depressed, but apathetic. Then it's going to happen. And nothing we can do about it. And I gave up. So when I even stopped watching the news. I stopped watching about Ferguson. I stopped watching about New York. Because one thing, it brought back a lot of memories. The second thing, I felt like none of us understood where this country was headed. I can leave here today and say that I have been blessed to be here. I feel like there is a hope for us. I feel like when I was thinking about coming here, one of the things that I was thinking about was change. I said to myself, well, that sounds good, Patricia, but where's the change going to happen? And if around this table here today, that each one of us can change one other person, that it's a beginning. It's the same beginning that happened during slavery time. It took one person to say, I'm going to make a difference. And each time there has been some type of change, it's taken one person. So if each one of us leave here today with the same hope that I have, the commitment, because now I feel like that I can go out. I was telling someone earlier today, I said, you know, I speak a lot in January and February. That's my months. But mostly, I speak to Caucasian groups. Rarely do we get invitations from any African-American groups. And I think because they don't have hope. And so they don't want to hear the pain. They feel like, well, that was then, and this is now, and we don't want to talk about it. But with a new awakening, I feel like that I can talk to some of the young people and maybe get them to understand that it's not over and that we have an opportunity to make this world better. It might not happen before I leave this world, but it's going to be better. And history will look back and say, those were the people who knew it was going to happen. And those were the people that made one other person know.
A rather hopeful note that helped to wrap up those special meetings a couple of years ago in Nashville after the Ferguson riots. If you missed last week's show, you can find it on the Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons show page at myfaithradio.com, or you can find the original podcast at qideas.org on the podcast page under the episode entitled Implicit Bias. At the end of this show, Gabe will have a special way for you to get some helpful resources, for you to delve more deeply and think better on the topic of racial healing. We still have some time on this week's Q Ideas, so to further the discussion, last week we heard a bit from David Bailey from an organization called Erebon. He talked about implicit bias. While most of us would think we don't have explicit racial bias, we all have, and he did emphasize all have, blind spots. At this past spring's Q conference, David helped to better explain and flesh out implicit bias, how we can face it so we can help facilitate racial healing in our communities. Let's listen in.
So, I believe the church should live and lead by example in the areas of diversity and reconciliation. Now, God has made the church a reconciling community. That's what he created the church to be. But why is it that the church is better known as a segregated community than a reconciling community? It is our reconciliation for one another that gives credibility to the reconciliation between God and humanity through Jesus Christ. And there aren't a lot of people in this room that would disagree with that statement. But again, we're known more as a segregated community than a reconciling community. So I was kind of given the task of the question to answer the question, are we or do we have a problem with racism in America? So I thought I'd just pray about it, ask God. Yes. Okay. The problem isn't the civil rights understanding of racism, but the post-civil rights methodology of colorblindness. So this idea of colorblindness is that, you know, I don't see color. I just see grayish humanoids. It's one of those things that has good intentions, but it's very misguided. It comes from Dr. King's idea that one day that his children, he had a dream that his children would not be judged by the color of their skin, but the content of their character. But considering the fact that we've had over 400 years of racism and systemic injustice, we got to realize that colorblindness is not the way to handle our history. Colorblindness is a problem for two main reasons. One reason is the fact that colorblindness does not acknowledge the image of God in diverse people groups. The second thing is that colorblindness actually encourages us to do surface level diversity and be passive in reconciliation. But again, God's called the church to be a what? I learned how to preach in a black church, and so, you know, you got to talk back, right? Thank you, brother. Got one. All right, so what do we do? How do we become a reconciled community? It takes intentionality, vulnerability, and confession. So here is my community in Richmond, Virginia. You'll have all kinds of people. You have people of different races, ethnicities. You have people who are millionaires in this picture, and you have people who are homeless people in this picture. You have some reformed people, some Baptists, some Lutheran, some charismatics, and people who are suspicious of charismatics. And I'm going to tell you something. It takes intentionality to get this kind of diversity. This type of thing just doesn't happen on its own because we're all in our world doing what we do, and it makes sense to us. Now, here's one of the things that we thought. About 7 years ago when we started this community, we thought that if we just got a diverse group of people together and just hope for the best, that we could be a truly multicultural community. But even with our good intentions aren't good enough. The thing that is challenging that we met was that we all have some level of implicit racial bias. Very few of us are Jim Crow racists. But we all have this idea that in our cultural understanding, there are some things that we think are just normal. But then you add the fact that we've had over 400 years of systemic racism, and then for 30 years, we practiced this like colorblindness and thought that it would just be okay, so then all racial biases would be gone. But racial biases are the type of things that when you have an association with something that might be associated with a person, a place, a thing, or an idea that might be associated with something racial, there are these just automatic, unconscious things that come up that make you react a certain kind of way. So let me give you an example. Gabe Lyons is over 6 foot tall. I'm pretty sure that Gabe Lyons has never been referred to as a scary white man, a big scary white man. But the term big scary black man is something that sounds normal to our ears. So then both Gabe and I are two mild-mannered type of guys. But if we were supposed to supposedly express some type of anger, then the perception of an angry black man is different than the perception of a angry white man. So implicit racial biases, they influence our friendships, our networks. How do we fund things? Who do we think is qualified for leadership? And also, it affects all types of important decision-making processes. So how do we overcome implicit racial bias? We have to have safe spaces to be vulnerable and discern our implicit racial biases. About 3 to 4 years into the birth of our community, we were on a staff retreat. And one of the African-American women who was on the staff, she said, "Hey, I am hungry for somebody to know me as a woman of color. I'm angry that we talk about racial reconciliation, yet we're not doing anything about it. And I'm just tired of having a code switch for just to make white people feel comfortable." So her vulnerability actually encouraged me to say, you know what? I'm a little hurt, too, by the cultural insensitivities from our community. And the co-pastor, another African-American man, he said, you know, I'm really tired that I have to assimilate into white cultural norms, and I just can't be respected as a pastor. So here we were at a crossroads. We had to make a decision. Were we going to create a safe space of belonging for people to bear one another's burdens across racial and ethnic identity? Or were we going to make the dominant culture feel comfortable? And so we grew a lot as a community. And we, yes, did some education about the issues of race, but we really learned how to be a vulnerable community and a confessing community. So I'm just going to tell you a little bit of how things happened when Ferguson and Eric Garner choking incident came up. That was a very hard time for our community. It was a hard time for me personally. It was a hard time for those who were in this particular space, really caring and living and working out reconciliation. We decided to have a prayer service. And in our prayer service, we had a time of open prayer and lamenting about what was going on. And something that we learned as a community is that a Christian community cannot be a reconciling community if it's not a confessing community. And so in this prayer, there was a 70-year-old white man, that's a retired engineer. He got up. He said, "God, before I came to be a part of this community, I didn't know anything about race relations and white privilege. I was ignorant. God, please forgive my ignorance, and please forgive the ignorance of my white brothers and sisters, because we just don't know." Then there was a white seminarian woman who was married to a Mexican man, and she said, "You know what, as a white woman, I would never know what it's like to be a African-American or a person of color here in America. But what I can say is that I know what it's like to be married to an undocumented Mexican man." And every single time I hear somebody that says, "I wish those dirty Mexicans would go back home," it's like a knife being thrusted in my stomach and twisted. And she's praying this and crying and wailing. And there was this youth pastor's wife, an African-American woman, that said, "You know, I'm a new mother to a beautiful baby boy, African-American baby boy, and my greatest fear is that I would lose my son to implicit racial bias." That day, we did not solve the problem of race, but we learned what it meant to be a reconciling community. We got a chance to practice what it meant to be a reconciling community. So, Q, I just want to leave you one question. When you go back home, will you lead your community to be a reconciling community or a passive community? Because a reconciling community is what the hope of the world is today. Thank you very much.
What I love about David, who's now become such a good friend, is how much he can just be patient and help us all start to learn some things that maybe we've never thought about before. And he's done that for me, and he's been somebody in my life that's helped me start to see and peel back the layers in a really incredible way.
Well, as we conclude this podcast, I've got a free gift for you. I really want to give you something that we in our organization over the last year have been working very hard on so that we could help equip you to understand some of the best research, some of the ways in which you can better be informed as you engage the public square in your workplace, your neighbors, people who maybe aren't so fond of religion and faith, but actually care about the world that we live in. And so the 60-page research study is something we're going to deliver to you digitally, and it's laid out in a beautiful way. In fact, some of you could take it and use slides as you're trying to educate and inform other people about what's happening in the world. You know, some of the data that's in here, one is that 95% of Americans actually agree on something, which you might be shocked by. But the thing they agree on is that people on opposite ends of the spectrum ideologically label one another so severely that they make finding common ground impossible. It's data such as that 46% of Americans believe that religion is part of the problem in our society. And so you're going to see not only the data, but we unpack what does that mean then for a person of faith to walk into this kind of a public square, this kind of a setting, and actually know how to lead. So it's called Leading in a Pluralistic Society. I want you to get out your phone or pull over on the side of the road, take a moment to pause or rewind this when you're sitting down, and actually write down this number, because if you'll text us, we'll actually send this to you immediately. And so the number that you text is 520-394-8739, and just text the word research. So text research to 520-394-8739, and when we get that, we're going to send out to you this research study, and we hope you enjoy it. It helps inform you, helps you prepare you as you look ahead to the new year and how you're going to engage with your friends and your neighbors. This show is made possible in partnership with Faith Radio and Northwestern Media.
Thank you for listening to the Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support. You can make your gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or on your podcast player. And thank you for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the impact of Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons.